Om sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. We're in verse 62, chapter 7, verse 62.
Adi madhyavasaneshu, swasya brahmatva dhiriyam, naiva vyabhicharetasmat, aparokshyam pratishthitam, adi, madhya, avasaneshu, swasya, brahmatva, dihi, yam, na, eva, vyabhicharet, tasmat, aparokshyam, pratishtitam. Going back just to kind of briefly bring you forward from verse 60. Verse 60, he was finishing up the tenth man story and said, the knowledge that arises from the statement, I am the tenth man, in other words, when the old man comes and says, you are the tenth man, that allows this knowledge to come up. The knowledge is born of the recognition, deshamosmi, deshamaha asmi, I am the tenth man. And that knowledge that comes from that, vihanyate, that's something that can't be negated. Nobody can do anything about it. And not only that, he says, adi madhya avasaneshu. Once the knowledge arises, having, let me finish this, navatvasyad samshayaha. Once that knowledge arises, there's also no doubt possible, na samshayaha, that means no doubt. There can't be a doubt about there being nine. But there being only nine. Once the tenth man recognizes, I am the tenth man, this doubt that there is only nine can't be there. And not only that, what you recognize in recognizing I am the tenth man, and there's no question about there being nine, you also realize that there never were only nine. In the beginning of the whole inquiry, there were ten. In the middle of the inquiry, there were ten. At the end of the inquiry, there are ten. There have always been ten. There has never been nine. The idea that there was nine was just a product of ajnanam, right? That product of ajnanam, that conclusion that there were nine, caused a lot of problems, right? But the problems all had their roots, their basis in ignorance. They had no basis in reality. And so when a person gains that knowledge, you know, I'm the tenth man, then all of those problems also are immediately dismissed, and the recognition is that I am the tenth man, I was the tenth man, I am the tenth man, I'll always be the tenth man, there never was this problem, didn't exist. So that's the effect of jnanam, and that's jnananishta, right? Because the idea of the possibility of there only being nine, that possibility is no longer there. There are ten, period. So nothing can shake that. Once the person sees that, right, it can't be shaken. That's what we call jnananishta. Then he goes into verse 61, and he's now taking this tenth man story, and he's bringing it to what we call the darshtanta. The tenth man story is the drishtanta. It's an example. The drishtanta is an illustration, an example to make you understand something. The thing that they're pointing to, what are they telling the story for? What is that going to translate into? That's the Darshanta. And so now this story is going to now be related back to the Darshanta, the very reason that the thing that it's paralleling, the reality that it's paralleling, right? So here, that he uses the Vakya, Sad eva ityadi vakyena brahmasattvam parokshataha. There's this famous, very famous Vakya, and it's said in different ways in different shrutis. But this Vakya that's being quoted here in this verse 61 is Sat eva saumya idam agre asi ekam eva advatiyam. He says, "Oh dear one," starts speaking to his son, "Hey Saumya, Sat, existence alone, this creation, this was existence alone. Sat eva. Idam, this was Sat eva, existence alone, agre, in the beginning. Asi means was. This, which was existence alone, that existence, what is its nature? It is ekam advitiyam. The existence was one without a second. That's where the non-dual. Before this creation, because we have so many ideas of what one means. Like we could say one universe. This is one universe. But this one universe is made of an infinite number of parts. Right? And so people think of non-duality like that. We're all interconnected. We're all one being. But they think of that oneness in terms of the interconnectedness of all beings. But then there's many different beings, many different things that are interconnected. So here, that's not the meaning of one. That is a meaning of one, right? But that's not the meaning of one. That's why they add advatiya. Advatiya means second. A negates that, advatiyam, without a second, right? So we say, ekam, one, advatiyam, without a second. One, non-dual, sat. Now when you say one, without a second, what that is meant to do is to remove from your concept of one any duality on any level. Like for instance, we can, there's three major types of duality. We can say, this universe is one, but it has many parts, right? It's one, but it has many parts. Or we can say, I am one member of a species, of the human species. I am one member of the human species, right? I can say like that. Or I can say, this species is one among many. There are many different species, like there's cats and dogs and humans, etc. It goes endless number of sets and subsets, all one different from the other. But I can say, I am one subset. I am one set among all of these sets, right? Or I can say, of this one set, I am one member. Of the human set, I am one member of the human set, of the human species. But I could say the human species is one member of an infinite number of species. Or I could say, all there is one, but that one has many parts. These are all different forms of duality. Right? Because if I say, I'm one member of a set, one person among humans, then there's still, I am one among humans, there are still many, right? If I say the humans are one group among many, there's still many. But if I say, I am one being, but this one being is made of many parts, where often we get in trouble thinking when we use the word non-dual, especially in terms of the universe, like how I would say, I am one person here. But this one person is made of many parts, right? It's got arms and legs and heart, etc. And this is one lamp here, but this lamp has many parts. It's not non-dual. This universe is one. Say the whole creation, what the Vedanta will call the Jagat or the Vishwa, means the whole manifest creation, every level, space, air, fire, water, earth, on the physical level, subtle level, all of the multi-dimensionality of the universe with all of the different lokas, all of the different spheres of existence, that universe is one. but of course it has an infinite number of parts. And so there's oneness there, but not one without a second. See what I mean? One without a second means there are no parts. In terms of, we would look at it like this. We'd have to say, for one without a second, there's only one species in the universe. Only one species in existence. One species, one set. And that one set has only one member. And that one member has no parts. You see? That's Advaita. That's non-duality. And so for the Upanishads to say Advaita, the truth, the reality is Advaita, is non-dual, is ekam advitiyam sat. Now you could say, that's why do they say sat? Because you could say, well, the absolute reality is one non-dual asat, one non-dual nothingness. Right? Because if you say, what is there that is one without a second, means there's nothing there at all. There's no duality. You could say, well, there must be non-existence. No. It's the reality of this creation is sat, is pure being, which is indivisible, which is one without a second. And it is from this one pure being that is one sat, ekam advitiyam, one and one without a second. It is from this being that the entire creation has come. That's what this sentence says. And so here, in the way that Vidyaranya is looking at the teaching methodology, is we're going to start the teaching methodology from the Tathagata. And the Tathagata means the nature of Ishvara, the nature of Brahman. And so the student approaches the teacher and asks to the teacher, you know, what is the reality? What is Brahman? What is the truth? And the teacher says, in the beginning, there was only Sat. In the beginning, this creation was only one non-dual being, right? And then from there begins the unfoldment. So now when he starting from the Tathagata, all from Ishvara. Tathagata means the word Tat in Tattvamasi. Everybody familiar with that? Like if I say Tattvamasi, it means that thou art. That's the Mahavakya. That's the whole, that is what the Upanishads have to teach you, is you are that. So Tat means that. Tvam means you. So if I say this teaching is beginning from the Tathagata, it's beginning from that. It means the first thing I'm going to do is unfold the nature of Brahman, the nature of Ishvara. So say if we say the whole unfoldment begins from the Tathagata and Tattvamasi, it's beginning from Ishvara. Or I could say this teaching, the unfoldment that we're using is going to begin from the Tvampada, from you, right? So that's where we do the Drik Drishen and recognize the nature of consciousness and then recognize the conscious being that you are is not something that can be objectified, and so it's one, the same, the consciousness that I am is the same consciousness that you are, and therefore must be the same consciousness as Ishvara. And so there's a big unfoldment that goes on, but it's going on from the Tvampada. Here, Vidyaranya is having the unfoldment go on from the Tathagata. Because from the Tathagata, if it goes on from beginning with Ishvara, it would be like this. In the beginning, O Soumya, O dear one, right? In the beginning, all this was set alone. This is what the Upanishads reveal. In the beginning, all this was one non-dual existence alone. You're hearing this. There's nothing in what's been said at this point. They're just talking about Ishvara, the nature of reality, the nature of Brahman. There is nothing there that's going to give you aparoksha jnana. All you're recognizing, right? Aparoksha jnana, direct immediate knowledge. All you're recognizing at this point is that if you ask, what is the nature of reality, the nature of Brahman, because you've in Indian and you've heard these words, right? You've heard of the Upanishads. So what is the nature of Brahman? What is the nature of the Upanishads? The teacher says, in the beginning, all of this that you're experiencing was one non-dual being alone. And then goes on to describe that. What you're gaining right now at this point is up is paroksha jnanam. Oh, so Brahman is pure being, which is the one from whom all of this has come. Right? That's paroksha jnanam. So he says, by the statement sat eva, in the beginning all of this was sat alone, the Brahma Sattvam, the existence of Brahman, the beingness which is the existence which is Brahman, the Brahma Sattvam, parokshataha, indirectly grihitva, having understood this indirectly, because all you know is what you've been told. Right? So it's an indirect, not immediate knowledge, it's an indirect knowledge. But then, as the teaching goes on, it resolves in tattvamasi. Tattvamasi. In the beginning, all of this was Brahman. The teaching goes on unfolding, and where does it resolve? You are that. You are that Brahman. And so there has to be a teaching methodology that takes you from the appreciation of Ishvara and Sat to the recognition that that Sat, which you're appreciating, is Asmi, is the Tattvamasi, that I am that. And when I recognize that the Sat that's being talked about as Brahman is my being, then I have aparoksha jnanam. Because otherwise, your idea of existence, the non-dual, one without a second existence, which is the truth of this universe, even though that is you, you're still recognizing it theoretically. Right? You're not recognizing it directly, immediately. Now, what's interesting here is there is no way for you to recognize Sat, which is the very being, the very truth of this creation. There is no way for you to recognize it in any other way except for you to be it. In other words, what I mean by that is, that's why we use the word aparoksha. When you hear the words from the Upanishad, in the beginning all there was is Sat, and from that Sat this whole creation has come. Right? You can appreciate that, but you can't see it. You can see name and form. Right? You can hear sound. You can grasp. You have sense organs that look outward. You can see images and forms in your mind, right? So you're capable of perceiving through your upadhi, through this conditioning adjunct of body, mind, sense organs. You're capable of perceiving this world, perceiving the thoughts in your mind, the moods, the feelings, but these are all part of the manifest creation, right? So this upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs, is capable of perceiving the manifest creation. But it's not capable of perceiving existence. You can perceive existence through maya in terms of name and form. Like I can say, the existent pot, the existent chair, the existent space, the existent rug, the existent person, the existent clothes. Everything enjoys existence because existence is the very being of the whole creation. It's that from which this whole creation has come. There's nothing here, in fact, but existence. But you can't look at some existence. Right? So how to go from the concept of the isness, which has been objectified as Brahman, in the beginning there was only existence, how to get aparoksha jnanam, direct immediate knowledge of that? It is to recognize that the existence that we're talking about in terms of the isness which you are enjoying in terms of this world, everything it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, everything is, everything enjoys that existence. But how can you know what that existence is? How can you have direct, immediate knowledge of it? Only by recognizing that the existence that they're talking about is your amness. And that because whether we're talking about isness or amness, neither one is objectifiable. Think of it through your sense organs or through your mind or the thoughts, moods, emotions, intellections in the mind or the sense perception. In none of those will you see existence. They all have being, right? There's nothing that in your experience that's away from being, but being itself is not an object to look at. And so the being itself has to become, the isness and the amness have to come together. That's the tetvamasi. You could say like this. The isness of Ishvara is the amness of the individual. The isness and the amness have to join. You have to, it's not like there is no isness over here and amness over here that have to come together. It's that my amness is the very being of this creation. That the isness and amness are just words for the being which is myself. Because I say I am an existent being. Now, that recognition is what brings the paroksha, the indirect knowledge of it is, this creation all is, enjoys a pure being, to what brings that understanding to the aparokshatvam is to recognize that that pure being is me. Right? That's what it is. There is no other way to recognize that because being is not an object. And yet you are. Right? You exist. And so that existence that's being talked about is the very substance of all of your experience. It is that existence which is your being. And so that's the Mahavakya, I am this. Now, Swamiji does a lot of work with working now from the Tetpada like this because the fact is that in your experience through your sensory perception of the world, that experience is warp and woof with the being of the world. We don't question it, actually. Right? The nama rupa, the names and forms that you experience, are totally pervaded, clay pot-like, are totally pervaded by being. It's inconceivable. In fact, you can't conceive of anything in the creation that's devoid of being. It's just that that being has to be owned. Right? It has to be owned as my non-objectifiable self. And so this is the teaching, that the teaching methodology that Vidyaranya is working on here. And he says, having first understood the existence that the whole creation enjoys as Brahman, then through Tetvamasi, through that Vakya, through that statement, one comes to recognize what that actually is. What that existence, we call it the Vyakti. What the actuality of that existence is. That the existence has to be recognized as my amness. Once it's recognized as my amness, then the amness which I am is the being of this creation. You have no problem. It's subtle. You have no problem giving beingness to everything that you experience in the creation, subtle and gross. And that is the one common denominator. And we can take any object in the creation, anything, doesn't matter what it is, anything, anywhere, and dissect it, tear it apart. So we recognize that the only thing there, in fact, the more you analyze this creation, the only thing that you can't destroy in the creation is being. What remains true, say you take any given object and you dissect, like Swamiji will sometimes dissect a pot. Take a pot, using the clay pot a little bit differently. You dissect the pot is, you break the pot into parts, the parts are. The parts is. The pot is. The parts is. The make it into dust. The clay dust is. Right? You blow up the dust into molecules. The molecules is. The beingness is something. Is the common denominator of all experience. Now, as you go through doing this, breaking every single experience into an infinite variety of parts, where the larger part has collapsed into smaller parts, and those smaller parts have collapsed into smaller parts, what you realize is that the being that all of these parts are taking place in remains exactly the same. And then you start to focus on, where does this beingness that all of these parts, all of these things are enjoying, where does it reside? Where is it? Because it's not in the parts. Like the parts go, every time you dissect something, that thing is gone, whatever it was. Like if I take a pot and I make it into shards, there is no pot there anymore, there's just clay shards. But those clay shards are. And there hasn't been the slightest waver in this experience of being. To use a different kind of example, you notice all the time, if you're having a dream and you wake up from the dream, there isn't the slightest movement in the experience of being. No matter how real and how engaged you were within the dream, no matter how big the identification was with the character in the dream, when the dream disbands, there isn't the slightest ripple in the nature of being. And that's true, that's why sometimes the dream example is considered such an important example, because it gives you a little mini universe and you can see what death is all actually like. There is no such thing. There is no such thing. There's not the slightest ripple in being going from waking state to dream state. But it's exactly the same here. In reference to all experience that you have in the creation, there's not the slightest ripple in being itself. Being is the constant, and we trust that constant. And we trust that constant in the self. In this sense, we totally take it for granted. But now the question is, where is this being, and who is this being? Right? Because you have to see that the being itself is not an object. Any object is nitya. Any object. Nitya means it has no substance. It's infinitely divisible. You can't find the substance there. So if you work with this, what you discover is being, what we mean by being, is myself. The me. The swarupa of being is amnes. The swarupa of being is my being. Now, if I say my being, what's the my?
Yeah.
When we say this my being, we have to work on that language-wise. But actually, to say my being is a legitimate thing to say in language. Like you can, we'll use the Shastra will use the example of Rahu's head. If you've ever known any Jyotisha, any astrology, Rahu is the north node. And so if you say Rahu's head, as though Rahu has a head, Rahu is the head. Right? So if like that, if you say my being, the my is the being. There's no my that has being. It's the me is the being. So you could say, instead of saying my being, you could say the being which is me. The being which is me. That being which is non-objectifiable, right, is not something that is owned by any of the mitya. Mitya means the manifest creation. It doesn't own it because the mitya comes and goes. Everything in the creation comes and goes. So because it comes and goes and being doesn't come and go, the mitya has no being of its own. Because it comes and goes, but it's not away from being. Being is its truth. See what I mean? So what is that truth? Where is it? Where is that truth? It's not in the mitya body, because the mitya body comes and goes and can be infinitely divided. It's not in the mitya sense organs, because they come and go and are infinitely divisible. It's not in the mitya thoughts, because they come and go and are infinitely divisible. So these things can't own being because they come and go. What is the only experience that doesn't come and go? Is being itself. But what does that have to do with me? The being itself that never comes and goes. What about you? What doesn't come and go? In all of the experience, the physical experience, sensory experience, mental experience, emotional experience, even the ahankara. All of these experiences are coming and going. What is it coming and going? Me. The one who is present, changelessly present in all of these experiences. If you weren't changelessly present, then you would be gone too. The thought goes, I'm gone. Somebody else has come. But I'm the constant. I'm the constant. And so the whole Mahavakya is bringing here, the way that Vidyaranya is going to be using it now, is bringing this beingness that we totally take for granted, recognizing that the beingness that's superimposed on all of these experiences that I'm looking at is only myself. That the beingness is me. And that's the Mahavakya, and that's what gives you the aparoksha jnana. It's the recognition, I am that. Right? I am that being. There's no being out here. I am that. And when you say, I am that, what makes that aparoksha? If you say, I am that, it means that you recognize that the being that they're talking about is in fact yourself. Mm-hmm. It's aparoksha if you're recognizing that the being is yourself. Not that they're describing a self to you which you're supposed to realize, but when you recognize that what the Upanishads are talking about is the being which is yourself, when you say I am or I exist, that this being that is intimately you, the me, it is this me that is the being that the creation enjoys. And so now he's going to give a little bit more of an example in the 62. He's paralleling this to the tenth man story again. He says, based upon this sadeva samya idam eva agra asi, he says, swasya brahmatvadihi iyam. This knowledge of the brahmatva, the nature of being Brahman for myself, the swasya, for me, being Brahman, this dihi, this knowledge of myself being Brahman, okay? Naiva na eva vyabhicharet. That knowledge, once recognized, dihi means it's knowledge now. I've cognized it. Once I've recognized that, then adi madhya avasaneshu, in the beginning, middle, and end, before, during, and after that recognition, na eva vyabhicharet, it can never waver. It would never be, that recognition is never going to be, I finally become Brahman. Yeah. Or, I've evolved into Brahman. You see what I mean? The recognition is that this me, that has always been me, is Brahman. The me that has always been me, that I've always recognized as me, it is this me is Brahman. So what do I mean? This me, when I say I am, I exist, I am me. Just in simple, if I walk around like some idiot, I am me, I am me, I am me. Now, say I say I am me. Right? Like I can say, just and any human being can say, I, this person who's here, I was here yesterday, and I was here a year ago, and I was here 10 years ago. I was younger. I was also here 30 years ago. Yeah? And I was here a minute ago, and a minute before that. I was here when I was sad. I was here when I was happy. I was here when I was doing this. I was here when I was doing that. So this person, even just as a samsari, I recognize my own presence. I can remember my childhood. And I'm the one that has had that childhood. I sometimes joke when my mother told me when she was quite old, I can't believe that I have this old body. I'm the same one that was 20. So she says, yeah, this one that's stuck in this old body, I can't believe it, because I haven't changed. Right? We all have that experience. Our minds have changed. We've had moods and all of that. But I'm the one that has had those moods. Right? So I haven't changed. So now, what do you recognize when you recognize I am Brahman? You don't recognize that you've now become Brahman. You recognize that this me, that in fact has always been and always will be, it is this me, is Brahman. So for me, there's no past, present, or future. There's no becoming in the recognition. You recognize that the truth of this is your being. You see what I mean? And that's the nishta. There's nobody, once you see it, nobody can do anything about it. Because you can't find another being. And look at, in this creation, infinite creation, just imagine infinite extension. If you can know this, then you can apply what you know in reference to this Maya that you're experiencing through your sense organs. You can apply it to the whole creation, multidimensional, on every loka, because every loka means every world of experience, heaven and hell worlds and all of these type of things, and go extend infinitely throughout the entire infinite creation. Because everything that you experience in the world has something in common. That is, it's objectifiable, it exists within time and space, and it is subject to change. Right? So we can extend that reality of Maya, of Mithya, throughout the creation multidimensionally. As long as it exists within time and space, it is subject to change. If it's subject to change, it's subject to beginning and end. Right? It's a subject to birth and death, coming into being and going out of being. That's a given. You can extend it to include the entire creation. So now, if that is true, then everything that exists within duality itself has no real existence. The entire creation, anything imaginable, has existence. It is, right? Because you wouldn't even be able to imagine it or even know about it if it's not there. So anything that it is, anything that exists within the creation, it is. But it doesn't own that isness, because it itself comes into existence and goes out of it. Right? If it comes into existence and goes out of it, it has no being of its own. Right? And so now, that being so, in this entire creation of name and form that exists within space and within time, my body and mind and sense organs and eye notion and ears and everything imaginable, my thoughts, my moods, my emotions, the ahankara, the eye notion, physical body, everything about me is as much a part of this creation as everything else. And all of it is objectifiable. Absolutely all of it. Do you know what I mean by objectifiable? It means I have a subject-object relationship with it. I can describe it. I can watch it change. And so that is the condition of the universe. Now, that universe is what we call mithya in terms of order and of reality. You say it's mithya because when we look at it to try to describe it or find something that's here, we can't find anything. Because everything in it is bound by change and comes and goes. And so there's no substance. But when you say there's no substance, you can't say there's non-existence. So you say this whole thing that has no being of its own has only being for itself. Because there's no way to have a non-being experience. Every experience that you have, in fact, is only being. But that being has to be differentiated, right? The being has to be differentiated from the mithya, the names and forms that are enjoying it. Now, this is all that we have to work with. You can't bring something in. You have time, space, name, form, being. And this is it. Right? It's what you have here. And there's only one thing in that group that is real. There's only one thing that is not coming into being and going out of being. And that is being itself. Right? So that's the reality. Now, say you recognize that being in relationship to name and form. The relationship of being to name and form. The relationship of your being to name and form. Say you recognize that. There is no way to change that recognition. That's what I'm saying. If you recognize, even if you recognize the truth of it in this room, here with your body, your mind, your sense organs, the perceptions of the room, whatever the totality of your experience at this moment, if you recognize the truth of that, you know, the satyam mitya, there's no way that you can take that recognition back. There's no place where that reality is not so. Where would you go to make it not so? Because being itself you can't touch and you can't objectify. And everything that exists within your experience comes and goes. Right? So being remains. Everything in experience comes and goes. How are you going to change that? You could say, like the Buddhist, you might want to change the language. You might want to say, well, everything in the creation comes and goes. It has no being. You might want to talk like that. Everything in the creation comes and goes. It has no being. Why? Because it comes and goes. Something that comes and goes, comes into being and goes out of being, definitely has no being because it has non-existence on either side. It's all infinitely divisible. So this creation that we experience, including my body, mind, sense organs, everything that I might take to be the self, all of it comes and goes. It's not real. All that is here is mitya. Like you peel it like an onion and there's no core. But that way of talking is meant. There's a whole different type of sampradaya going on. Their type of teaching methodology, because they will look at it in terms of what you perceive, what you experience, and just negate the reality of that experience in terms of having anything. Any part of that experience enjoying any type of existence. And just see everything is absolutely interconnected. Well, we see all of that too. But what we point to, and this is where maybe differentiates the teaching methodology of Vedanta from some of the other teachings, is that we use lakshana, we use a teaching methodology to point to what is left. You know, what is it that is not coming and going? And because that is your very being, not as an ego object into creation, but as the very being itself, that being can be pointed to. And why should it not be pointed to? If I can point to the lamp, right? If I can point to anything in my experience in terms of nama rupa, remember, here's your mind, and the teacher is talking, pointing to, differentiating the experiences that you're having. You're having these experiences through your sense organs of the world. You're having your experiences that of the thoughts and moods in your mind. I can point to all of those. You can say, yes, I know what you're talking about. I know that experience. Well, what if I point to the one, the awareful being, consciousness, right, that can be differentiated from the mind? What if I talk like that? Oh, no, you can't talk like that.
Oh, come on.
You're not allowed to talk like that. Why not? Why not? Because, this is, of course you're allowed to talk like that. I'll tell you why. Because even though you are not an object of the world that I can say, oh, look at you. I can say, look at your body, look at your mind, look at your sense organs. You know? But I can't say, look at your being as though it's an object. But I can point to your being because your being is there. Because you are there. You are there, self-effulgent me. And so that me is as much a part of the totality of experience as anything else. In fact, it's really the clay of the pot. It's the very being that is here. And so words can point to that. And that's the mind that has to say, oh, yeah. The mind has to recognize the obvious. It recognizes the obvious once that is pointed out. You can't point out something that is beyond time and space and beyond objectification, right? That certainly can't be pointed out except in one situation. And that is when that is you. When that is you, the conscious being that you are, is present, but you are not an object to be pointed out in the creation. You are here, present, self-evident. And the teaching can point that out. And then you recognize in your own experience, wow, it's the mind talking, yes. The mind is talking, but the mind is labeling the reality of your own presence. If I say, wow, yes, I am here and I am changeless. And I am the one who's illuminating, the one who's saying that these thoughts right now. I am the constant being. My presence is changeless. These words are labeling me, describing me. Why? If I can sit here and describe this lamp, which is away from me, why can't I describe myself? It's the mind that's doing the describing, the vok. The speech is describing it. Okay? So I'm describing your nature to you, differentiating you from your body, your mind, your sense organs, all these things that come and go. Since I'm describing you and you are there, what will the mind do about that? It'll recognize what I'm talking about. This is the whole teaching methodology. The mind recognizes when I'm pointing you out, your mind is recognizing what I'm saying. And in that recognition, it recognizes its own mityatva. Its own mityatva means it recognizes the reality of itself coming and going and coming and going and actually being maya, having no substance of its own, but totally enjoying for its substance the changeless being of myself. I am the self of the mind, but I don't change. When I point that out, then the mind says, oh, that's right. So that's why this teaching methodology is so important to understand. He's going through it in some depth here. And what he says is, here, once the person sees it, that dihi means knowledge, that knowledge is there. What knowledge? That Brahman, the Brahmatva, Brahman has been understood as being the non-dual, the one without a second being, which is the truth of this world, which is the self of this world. When I recognize, I see that being is myself, once I see it, there's no way to not see it. There's no way to get around it. So it becomes, vyabhichare means it is shaky. Na eva vyabhichare, you can't shake it. And there, you can't shake that vision. And therefore, aparoksham pratishtitam, that aparoksha jnanam, that direct immediate knowledge becomes nishta. Pratishtitam means you gain that nishta in that. Right? Because there's no option. Think of it like this also. The conscious being that you are can't be another way because it's non-objectifiable. If it's non-objectifiable, it doesn't have any parts. It's not subject to time. It's not subject to space. It's not subject to quality because it's not within Maya. It's not within the manifest creation. It's just pure being itself. It's just me, meanness itself. And so you can't do anything with that. You can do things within time and space. You can act upon it. But for that which simply is the very substrate being of time and space itself, self not bound by time and space, there's nothing to do. There's no other way to know it. You can't know it from the right side or the left side or the top or the bottom. You can't dissect it to know it more thoroughly. Like, say, for this physical body, here it is, but, you know, I'm barely scratching the surface. There's an infinite amount of dissection that could be done to really understand what's going on with this body. It's so extremely complex. Brahman is absolutely not complex. It doesn't have any parts. It doesn't have any sides. It doesn't have any space. It doesn't have a back, front, you know, left or right. And so this self is the absolutely simple. You can't know it wrongly. You can know it or not know it. If we say, well, you can know it wrongly by superimposing it on mitya, that's true. Where I can say, this is, this is, this is, this is, this is, and when this goes, it dies. I can know it wrongly in that way. But in terms of its the self, its own swarupa, its own nature, you can't know yourself wrongly or partially. You can't have partial knowledge of Brahman. You've just not even scratched the surface. There's no surface. Because there's no other thing, right, to go deep, more deeply into it. There's no more deeply into it. Brahman is Brahman, period. So you know that or you don't know it, right? Because it's indivisible. Maya, on the other hand, is infinitely divisible. You can never know it. And when they talk about Maya, this whole manifest creation, manifest knowledge, what can you know? Anything you know, you can shift the standpoint and know it differently. You can divide it a little bit more deeply and get more connections. You know? You can see, you can always expand, get more of a distance and see the infinite interrelatedness it has with all things. That's the nature of Maya. You can never really know anything, but we just say, well, we have practical knowledge. This knowledge that we have works in certain settings, in certain circumstances. But we never think we really know. We don't really know. And everybody knows we don't really know. All that's why science will say, if you think you know something, there's something wrong with you. You're like a fanatic or something. You're a fundamentalist fanatic because you think you know. You don't know anything. You just have some understanding that of something from a given standpoint. In fact, the Jains are very famous in their whole philosophy for this. They say this, so it's one of the cornerstones of the Jain philosophy. It goes something like this. This thing, such as it is. In other words, they won't make an absolute statement about anything. And that's part of their philosophy. They understand that there is no absolute philosophy, there is no absolute statement to be made about anything in this creation. We accept that. That's the infinite nature of Maya. That's mitya. You can't find anything here. We say that ourselves all the time. Can't find anything here. Even though in science we go on discovering the infinite order of things. But there's always more infinite order to discover. See what I mean? You can't know anything here. But Brahman, being one without a second, the isness, is not like that. It's not in that category. Because there are no sides or parts or depth. It is one without a second. Now, in meditation, when you're sitting just with your own self, me, your own presence, and let the thoughts and whatnot come and go and come and go. That's all Maya. Just you just let it do whatever it does. Doesn't matter. Just relax. Let it be. And look at your own being, just the me, your own self. And you ask yourself, am I big or small? What color am I? What size am I? Do I have any qualities other than just the me that I am? You ask yourself these questions, you find all of these questions are totally irrelevant. They don't fit. They don't apply. The me that you are has no size. It's not big, it's not small. It's just what it is without boundaries. What it is without any boundaries doesn't mean it's big or it's small. It means that it's infinite. That there is nothing else. Advaita. Right? Why do you say there is nothing else? Because all other experience, kind of like a dream, comes and goes. Changes. Just comes and goes and comes and goes. What doesn't change at all is the core, that core being. And it is absolutely known. There's no way to know it differently. You can ask yourself in meditation, is there any way that, you know, I can be more, know myself more, be more present? And the answer is no. But you have to see what these words mean. You know? And when you see that, then the task is to relate and understand the relationship of this simple me, that has always been me, to this manifest creation. And to really understand that, this body, mind, sense organs, thoughts, moods, emotions, all of it has to be given to the manifest creation. Because the manifest creation includes all of this. What this manifest creation doesn't include is your presence, which is the very being of the whole thing. It doesn't include it. It doesn't include you as an object within it. That's why you're going back and forth from your experience to this world and to the dream. Dream to the thoughts in your mind is so important, because the thoughts and just the thoughts in your mind or the dream, you can appreciate the freedom of your being. But that appreciation has to go up here. Just take a minute. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnas Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om